What's up, everybody? This is Michael, and welcome to Northwest Sports Talk. And today I'm going to talk about three segments. I'm going to talk about the Celtics a little bit, I'm going to talk about the Mariners a little bit, and then I'm going to dive into the Seahawks because OTAs are up and going right now. So the Celtics, gotta say, I'm not surprised, okay, that they lost. I'm surprised they lost in seven, honestly. Miami was a much better team, but I thought Boston would win a game, at least, maybe. But to win three in a row and force game seven was a surprise to me. And the reason it was a surprise to me is because I didn't think they had it in them. This Boston Celtics team we saw in game seven was the same Boston Celtics team I think we saw all series. But what drove them to play this way was being seen as an underdog at some point. They do great with that mentality. You cannot count on them to win. And it's one of those things where every year they're going to fall into. And, I got really mad last segment, and who knows, I might get mad again. But the Boston Celtics did a really good job of rallying, but they only do that when they're not in favor of winning the series. And by the time they're not the favorite anymore, then sometimes it's too late to turn around. So it's like, unless they're basically the underdog at the beginning, they're not going to win because they need to be put in a position where you don't think they're going to win these games. Now, I take away the game seven against LeBron in the Eastern Conference Finals away from Tatum's career as one of those chokes that he has on there, mainly because he was so young at that point, and we didn't expect that out of him. It sucked. It really did because we've seen the Celtics in that position time and time again. But that Celtics team, I think if you were going to put any blame on anybody, it was going to be Brad Stevens. And now you're not going to do that. You know what I mean? The Celtics did a great job of rallying. They did a great job of that. But what they can't do is they can't finish. They don't know how to finish. They've never learned. Because they aren't a team that can finish guys off like that sometimes, where the other team is just as tough as them, mentally tough. And they can't handle it because they're not a mentally tough team. See, I like to say one thing about teams take the shape of their leader. Teams take the way they lead or are being led and turn that and be what drives them in the direction they go. Because let me use the Seahawks, for example, with Russell Wilson. The Seahawks with Russell Wilson, the problem with them was they kind of just got really, what's the word I'm looking for? They got really, they just got like, they just burned out, basically. They were one trick pony almost at one point. They were a lot like Conor McGregor, where he starts out strong and doesn't finish great. That's what the Seahawks turned into. And that's what it's kind of been every year. And I think Russ focused so much on being good early instead of being good late, in the season that the teams just kind of fell apart. Now there's a lot of other things going on that contributed to all the heartbreak with the Seattle Seahawks. But at the core of it, a team took the shape of its leader, because the Seahawks were fake. Every single year they had it. Honestly, this last year with Geno Smith, this was the best they had looked. But with Russell Wilson, or as real as they looked since maybe the Legion of Boom was around, and even when they were here, the team kind of took that shape of, it was just kind of like, yeah, they had the pieces. Yeah, they had guys, but they just weren't the right guys, and they weren't the right pieces. And they just weren't what was going to make this team work. And what it was patching up holes. You just patched. It wasn't fixing. It wasn't tearing up the road, laying new pavement, and giving the people a new road. It wasn't that. It was, you were just patching up holes. And with the Celtics, that is what's going to happen soon. Because this is what they are. They burn out just that same way. But why do they do that? Well, Jason Tatum isn't the leader that you need. And I'll get into this in the next segment, but there's a lot of teams out there where they're really good. They're upside to the roof. They literally could go win a championship. But the reason they don't is because of their leader. Because that's the way it's just led by them. And not every leader's like that. Like LeBron, he does a great job of galvanizing the troops and pushing them to a certain set and standard. Guys like Michael Jordan could do that. But Jason Tatum's not Michael Jordan. And he's not LeBron. And I know he's not. And it's not trying to compare it to him to what their greatness was. But what made them great, what makes LeBron great, is his leading of the men in that locker room. LeBron historically sucks against teams that are sucks with teams where he plays with all his friends. Because at the end of the day, you can't lead your friends. Your friends are your friends. You're not going to really lead them in the direction you want them to go majority of the time. Because they take your opinion into account. And yes, your opinion matters, but at the end of the day, the only people who really listen to themselves and make a life for themselves in some sense are the people who listen to themselves. Because you can't let everybody in the world make a decision for you. It's okay to let people make decisions for you on certain things, like, should I color my hair? But when it comes to being the leader, you can't look to everybody for the answers. You can look for, hey, I don't know this. Maybe you do. You know, it's one of those things. And that's being a good leader, is knowing when to turn to people, not being a guy who just expects everybody to watch him and play the game of basketball and just go, okay, I'm going to play great too. Oh, he's not playing great. Wow, I guess the whole team's not going to play great. That's not how you make your team win. That's not. Countless times we have seen a guy like LeBron James go out there, and if he's not scoring his best, he's making the best passes and the best effort on defense. That's what he made his majority of his career on. I'm not talking about this back end of LeBron. He plays a great defensive game, but he knows what's going to make him, like, what am I trying to say? He knows what's going to make him great at the end of the day. And he's going to do the best thing for his team. But as a real leader, like, Tatum doesn't really do that for them. He just, you see it. And they talked about it all series. It's his body language. A lot like Kyler Murray, where you hear all these things about, well, he just looks like he's so irritated and he's not really bringing up the team. He misses a shot, he's rolling his eyes. Instead of missing that shot, if you miss it and your guy gets a rebound, like, just find the open teammate. If you miss it, you miss it. Get to the next play. Because you can't shoot how bad you shot in game seven the way and expect to be great. They did it against the Warriors, where shooting the three ball was the main thing you did. And that starts with the leader. Now, I'm going to get into game seven in a second, but I'm just talking about the makeup of this team right now. And you can't – that's your leader. You got to get in there. And you got to make sure that you are at least making this team work as hard as it can to get to the point you need to go. That's how you do it. You see it in sports all the time. You literally do. Now, I don't know what Patrick Mahomes was on, but you saw it in the Super Bowl. He came out there second half and just torched it. He won himself the game. So you can't see, like, you just can't see this team. I mean, I can't. And I hope you don't. I can't see this team winning anything in the near future, especially with what's going to come up. And what's coming up is you got to pay two players. You have to pay two players. And as a Celtics fan, my two favorite Celtics are Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. Boston cannot rely on them anymore. And maybe more Marcus. Marcus could be your third. But either because you're not paying him a whole lot. But you can't rely on Jaylen Brown. You just saw it. Everything was in his – everything. Everything that night was built up for Jaylen Brown. The towels had his mask on it. Jason Tatum gets hurt in the first play. He shoots his first four shots. They all go in. And then he follows that up to put 19 up on the board. 19. He got 8 rebounds, but 19 points. Shooting 1 for 9 from 3. If you're going to be a guy who's expecting to get paid like a max player, play like it. If you want to get paid like that, play like that. Do not go out there and expect this game to be handed to you because you're Jaylen Brown of the Celtics. You can't do that. Jimmy Butler has too much dog in him to let that happen. And you did. Now, do I wish I could have seen Jason Tatum make a couple more shots? Absolutely. Do I wish the rest of the team elevated itself? Absolutely. But Jaylen Brown had that time to go, okay, he's still here, but I'm going to put this on my shoulders. And he didn't do it. And that was the one thing I've seen from him time and time again. And this time, he did not do it. And I think it just cost himself $200 million with the Celtics. Because if you're the Celtics, you have to make the decision between whether or not you want to keep Jaylen Brown and you can find a better player than Jason Tatum out there, or you trade Jaylen Brown in a sign and trade, and you go get another piece for Jason Tatum and say, hey, Jason Tatum, your Robin didn't show up for you that game. That was the most important game maybe in Celtics in your little dynasty's history, maybe, where you could not lose that game. That game was way too important to lose. You lost the finals last year. It happens. You lost it to Golden State. There's dynasties out there. It happens. But how you rebound is you get back there, you play the Nuggets, and you win. And they just didn't do that. And you now have to make that decision whether or not Jaylen Brown was the reason you lost that game 7 or Tatum is. And you know it's Jaylen Brown. Well, then you have to go to the other question, because some people may say, well, Jason Tatum was hurt. Okay. Then if you look at the whole landscape, who do you say between the two you would have to move? And outside of that game 7, Jason Tatum seems to be the answer. Now, what do you do if you want to move him and you want to get something that's immediately impactful for your team? You probably trade him to the Spurs for the number 1 overall pick. And if you do that, I mean, I think honestly, now as a Celtics fan, I personally, I say get rid of Jaylen Brown. But right now, let's say they move on from Jason Tatum. If he was going to look for an opportunity and a place to go that probably would suit him best and probably would help him, I got to say, it's probably with Greg Popovich. Greg Popovich, I think, not saying he won't do good with Wembanyama if they pick him. I don't believe that he... Not that he won't be good with him. It's just kind of like, I don't know if it's the best fit, just based off of, I think he could fit in better places. Where the Celtics, I think, could use him in a different light. And Jason Tatum, I think, would flourish underneath that coaching. Jason Tatum's a very coachable player. But like Dwight Howard in his first stint with the Lakers, those lights get bright, man. And when you're in an organization that's looking at you and going, hey, we have 17, give us an 18th. Not give us our first, give us our second. And sometimes that's a lot of pressure too, but they're looking at you and going, hey, you play like it. You're supposed to be getting your number up there, retired. If you don't get it retired, you're not a great in Celtics' eyes. And they just can't rely on that. And I think the Spurs would change that for him. I think he'd actually do very well with them. But personally, I don't think he should go. I think it's Jaylen Brown. As great as he is, as great as he plays, you know his upside isn't where Tatum's is. And if you put Jaylen Brown on a different team that can work, I think you can find a contending team that may want to swap or something. Maybe able to get somebody over there. Honestly, if I'm talking from an NBA standpoint, I almost say right now, it's like, well, Jason Tatum's a great player, but he may not be the leader we want. Who's a leader out there that we can go grab and put him on our team and probably say, wow, that'd work great? and who's somebody that probably is on the back end of his career, so we can try to just squeeze it in instead of being like, here's the team, and then we got to make it long-term for Jason Tatum. I'd say that guy's probably Chris Paul. Now, I'm not going to get into my own personal feelings about how bad Chris Paul is in big games, but he kind of fits. And it's one of those things where he supplies that leadership to the team, where I think Jason Tatum is great enough where if he needs to step into the Batman, where it's almost 1A and 1B, or 1A and 2, or 1 and 2, where Chris Paul's the 2, but Chris Paul plays as the distributor for the team still. They just use Tatum's legs and move him around, just like kind of Steph Curry does. So if you use him in that way, I think it would honestly be really good for this team. Because I think what Chris Paul's teams in the past have done is kind of rely on Chris Paul. Rely on Chris Paul to be your leader for the team. Don't rely on him to be your offensive threat. He's a way better leader than he is an offensive threat. And he's a great offensive threat. But he's a way better leader. Instead of jeopardizing his health for that, maybe make him the facilitator. Give him a Rondo role. Because we've seen both of these guys push to the game. We know they can get there. We've seen it. We've seen it now for each guy once. So if they get into that big game, I mean, there's a good chance they win it. And you have a lot more cap flexibility after that. If I'm a Celtics, I'd probably trade them to there and make Devin Booker your point guard, which is fine. And now you have weapons at every disposal. Every disposal. And the Celtics also need to toughen up the center of their front court. I mean, I understand it's not a big man's game anymore, but guess what? Who's the guy in the NBA Finals? Who are the two guys that people are kind of talking about right now? Bam Adebayo and how he played great and how he can play great and how great he can be when he does play great against two-time MVP Nikola Jokic. So you may need to go get yourself a big man. I'm not saying go get DeAndre Ayton from the Suns, but if you could get a sign and trade, I'm telling you, it could work. It could work. So I'm going to move on to the Mariners baseball, you know, talking about fucking shitty Mariners. I keep saying it's early in the season, and I don't know. It's still early in the season, but I think it's a foregone conclusion that this team's not going to make the playoffs this year. And I think a lot of Seattle fans are living in denial about that. And we're living in this landscape where we expect that we're going to make the playoffs. And historically, we don't make the playoffs the year after we make the playoffs. We literally don't. Didn't happen in 95, didn't happen in 201. No. We played, and we were out. 95 was actually the back end of 94, I believe. And a 94 playoff run. Whenever we made the playoffs early before that, we didn't do it either. It's just not something we do. And that's okay. I think this year, the spotlight's just too big on this team. Kind of like with the Celtics, when you expect something, they're not going to give it to you. When you don't expect it, they probably will. And this team's kind of keeping themselves afloat right now. They're kicking ass against those shitty teams, man. Look what they do to the A's. Isn't it nice to have a team that's worse than us out there? Nobody's looking at us. We're not going to finish last place. If we finish last place this year, wow, I might have to stop being a Mariners fan. But they won't. So I don't know. I'm tired of getting so fucking angry about these goddamn teams, man. I mean, how long have we seen the Mariners just disappoint our ass? So many years, man. And it's just like one of those things where it's like, how could this get worse? And it just kind of keeps getting worse. Honestly. Like, at least we made the playoffs last year, and this feeling of like, okay, I've never seen them in the playoffs is gone. But it literally happened and it was gone. Cool. I want to see it again. Can we go be the only team, not be the only team that hasn't made a World Series? Thought that was the goal. And who knows? Maybe one day the pitching wakes up for this fucking team and we decide, hey, we don't want to lose 8-2 to the fucking Yankees every goddamn night. Maybe we want to play like we played against Houston. Oh, wait, Houston sucks ass too, kind of like us. How'd Texas get good? Oh, wait, this pitch clock. It's just kind of like, wow, the Mariners team looks like they got old really fast. And it's like, it's almost like baseball almost like catapulted itself like 10 years into the future. And all these teams that didn't look like they could really like flip the script, they just kind of fell off. Maybe it's making more teams better. I don't know. It just looks like the Mariners don't have it. Because they don't. I mean, they're a 500 team right now. They literally don't have it. They're 28-7. They rely way too much on the deep ball. They're not getting enough on-base hits. And when they do, oh, that's when you decide to not hit a fucking home run. Good job. Great. Thank you, guys. I don't know what I'm trying to say about the Mariners right now because it's just one of those frustrating times. But what I do know about them is that they're going to come up short a lot. And it's going to happen all the time. All the time. I mean, we got George Kirby on the mound tonight. And if that works, then we're good. But I don't see it working. I mean, I could see us winning this game. Don't take that the wrong way. But wow, we did a great job of winning, sweeping, winning, and then we lost to New York. And now we could make the playoffs. And I'm not saying, like, we're eliminated right now. I don't see this team being a playoff team. Right now, there's 8 teams with a winning record between 2 divisions. We have to be better than at least 5 of those teams. We have to be better than 5 of those teams. And right now, let me share with you what those 5 teams that they would potentially have to be better than are. Because this is what I want to say. They have to be better than Boston. They're not going to do. They have to be better than Toronto. Which I don't see them doing, and they already proved they can. They have to be better than New York. They're literally just lost the series, and if George Kirby doesn't pitch his brains out tonight, they're probably going to get swept. They have to be better than maybe Baltimore right now, who right now is a better team than them. They have to be better than the Angels. They lost a series to them. And then they have to be better than Houston. Either Houston or Baltimore, they have to be better than. And you want to know what's crazy? We beat them in the first series this year. You know, you think that would make me feel better about them. No, it doesn't. Because we beat them in the first series last year. I know that because I was there. And guess what we did? We didn't beat them in the series the rest of the year. And then we lost 3 games in a row by them. 2 of them, the most heartbreaking games I've ever had as a Mariners fan. and one game where I knew we were going to lose. So this Mariner team, and I don't want to sound like a downer on this season because we still got 100+ games to go, but they're just not built for it. You can see it. They look tired. Their arms in the bullpen look dead. They have no life in them. There's nothing about that bullpen that says, I'm ready to win these games. And there's nothing about this starting pitching staff that says right now, I can beat big teams. Because none of them can. They've proven that. We thought Bryce Miller was it. No. This team is going to repeatedly fail and give you the same product every damn time. They do it. Now, I still believe they sucked before, but I thought there was time and maybe they'd come along. And you know what? There still is time. And like I said, they could hit a hot streak and next thing you know, I'm eating crow. But right now, the way this team is playing right now, they're not making the playoffs. They're not. And you can't change my mind about that because of the fact that they're literally proving it to you right now in this series against New York. You got to get something to liven the bats up in here or something. Because our pitchers are just throwing, going back in the dugout. 1, 2, 3. All right, back out there. And it's like you're not giving them that pause where it's like, give them some support. See that they don't have to sit under the pressure of, I got to make every decision perfect or my team's going to lose this game. A type of pressure will kill a pitcher. Over a season, it will. And if this offense doesn't get picked up and they don't do something about it, they are going to lose the locker room in this team, I have a feeling. Yeah. So I'm going to move on to the Seattle Seahawks now, a team that hasn't completely, utterly disappointed us yet. So now I want to get into Seattle, or the Seahawks. We got an exciting year coming up for us, and it's OTAs right now, and I want to talk about some stuff. Nothing crazy. The Seahawks have an interesting year coming up. It's a big year. I think the NFC West is going to be a dogfight this year. Now, even though Arizona's going to suck, they'll be the A's. they're tanking for Caleb Williams. They're going to go get him, probably trade Kyler. Seattle is vying for this division with San Francisco. Now, right now, I know a lot of people will probably want to point to the Rams, but I'm not too sure on the Rams right now. Are they interesting? Could they be a dark horse? I think they could be 800 team right now. I just don't see them having the weapons to go up against another team. Right now, Seattle, I think, is a lot more stacked than the Rams are. They have they don't have a whole lot of pieces right now around them all. But Seattle's in an interesting situation. Now, last year, they were a surprise, obviously. But they didn't have any expectations. This year, there's expectations to the point where we expect them to be a winning team. But do we expect them to be better than the San Francisco 49ers? Right now, I'd say yes, because they have a quarterback who's healthy and a quarterback we trust, which is crazy to say about Geno Smith. But I think the majority would trust him more than Trey Lance right now because they haven't seen anything from Trey Lance. And obviously he's more healthy than Brock Purdy right now. So right now those are the two boxes you need. Is he good enough to start? Check. Is he good enough to play? Is he healthy enough to play? Check. That is one thing he signs the two boxes off on. Now, is this defense ready to compete with the San Francisco 49ers? Now, they added a lot of pieces this offseason. bring a Jerron Reed back, acquiring some free agents, bringing Bobby back, bringing in guys like I almost said Rashawn Gary, bringing in guys like Julian Love, bringing drafting guys like Devin Witherspoon. This team has a lot of talent on it and a lot of potential. But I still think maybe they're a year away from reaching that full potential, because people need to also realize we had two really good drafts. Do we win the Super Bowl the year we had those drafts? Oh, did we win the Super Bowl the year after we had those drafts? Yeah, that was the thing. We won the Super Bowl the year after we had the best draft, maybe in our career, or in our career, in our franchise's history. We had two great back-to-back drafts. And then the next year, we won it all. I think this team has really good potential. Actually, no, we didn't win it all. No, we didn't win it all that year. Sorry. But we did make the playoffs, and we still were a very viable team. We were a wild card team, but we were a very viable team. Last year, we did not look like a viable team in the second half of that playoff game. So if you're Seattle, what are your goals? I would say your goals are, obviously, have a winning record. Get the wild card. Get the higher wild card. And then be able to win a playoff game and potentially win another. Because right now you got to win a playoff game. I don't want any talk about a Super Bowl for this team. If they can get to one, of course you can get to one. Everybody's 0-0 right now. But I don't want to talk about that because they're not a Super Bowl team right now until they prove it. And with drafting guys like Jackson Smith and Jigba to the offensive side, you give Geno Smith those weapons he needs. But you should still expect them to be the fifth wild card right now. Don't get me wrong. I think San Francisco's got a tougher road ahead than most people think. But again, Seattle has a standard of, we need to be consistent across the board. That's why they, like I said with the Celtics, they tore it all down, repaved the road, and then they just kept going. They didn't stop and have a month-long retreat before they decided to do the work. They didn't take that year off. They said, no, we're going to do the work now. We're going to continue to work. We're going to make this great. And Seattle put in that work. Seattle made that happen. And how you continue to make that happen is you have this team play in a way that where they're going to play great. And how you do that is you help these guys learn. Tyreek Woolen's going to be coming off an injury going into training camp. And we need to make sure he's at his healthiest. Because what made the Seattle Seahawks team great when the Legion of Boom was around? And people were going to be like, oh, it was the pass rush. No, we had no pass rush. It was Chris Clemons and Red Bryant. Two guys that were good. They weren't what we needed. We needed Cliff Averill and Bennett. What's his fucking first name? It's not Martellus Bennett. That's his brother. God damn it. Anyway, we needed that. Michael Bennett. There we go. Fucking same name as me. Holy shit. We focused on them. That's what made that D line so great. It made it easier on Richard Sherman. Made it easier on Byron Maxwell, Earl Thomas, Jeremy Lane, Walter Thurman III, all those guys, Cam Chancellor. It made the job easier for them, but it was over and over again, covered sacks. They were making takeaways. And how you build this team into that is you continue to grow this secondary. You're waiting for Jamal Adams to leave at this point. They like him. They think he's great. But when it's time to re-sign him, you think they're going to? No. That's why they have Julian Love on a huge deal to get them to that point. And when I say huge deal, it's a 2-year deal. But you now have the highest paid backfield on the defensive side in the NFL. And the Seahawks are going to have to, at some point, really get into what they want to do with Jamal Adams. Because do you just keep him at this point? Because right now, you're going to have to eat a bunch of dead cap for him. And this year, they're not going to cut him. It would be $23 million towards the dead cap. The Seahawks could get out after this year. There's a $14 million cap hit. That's what would hit. That is where you're probably going to see them make the move, is get rid of him when he's a $14 million.